Producer Lottie Ferris Knowles is here to talk about Goddess, the fall and rise of showgirls, and give us her spin on our LGBTQ issues. Hi, Lottie.
Hi, Charlotte. Thanks so much for having me on.
Tell us about Goddess.
Well, as some of you may know and some may not, I've been working with documentary filmmaker extraordinaire Jeffrey Schwarz for about 10 years now. Actually, I think this may be our 10-year anniversary of working together. I started off with Vito, and then I produced I Am Divine with him. I've been involved in Tab Hunter and Alan Carr in sort of ancillary ways, if that's the right term. And then he brought this idea to me about doing a documentary on showgirls. Well, I have had a long history of obsession and love with that movie. It's very dear to my heart. So I was, of course, immediately on board. And we started shooting interviews a couple of years ago. Had to take a break while Fabulous Alan Carr was being released and while we were raising some money. And now we're finishing up those interviews and about to go into post-production, and hopefully we'll premiere in 2020, which is the 25th anniversary of Showgirls.
How did you get involved?
Well, I have this long history with the movie Showgirls, and I fell in love with it the moment I saw it. Someone brought me a VHS tape in 1996, and I just immediately found it to be the kind of the most fascinating, campy, over-the-top, hilarious, but also beautiful and interesting film. So when Jeffrey, all these years later, after we've been working together for so long, said, hey, do you want to do this documentary? You know, the answer is an immediate yes.
What do you hope to accomplish with this documentary?
I would say that we would like people to take a fresh look at Showgirls, because it's very interesting how the journey of this film has transpired. You know, Jeffrey loves making movies about underdogs, and certainly this movie, when it was being made and leading up to its release, was not an underdog. It had a lot of money behind it from Hollywood. It had two of the most powerful people and many powerful people from Hollywood who were involved, but on its release, it was so reviled. The vitriol that it faced was so great that it sort of started its underdog journey. And Elizabeth Berkley, who was, I think, 20 years old when the movie was released, someone I talked to recently for this, a filmmaker, I believe, Stephanie Paris, says that she, Anita Hill, and Monica Lewinsky were patient zero for the Me Too movement. Because why would a 20-year-old woman, this actress whose greatest crime was wanting to stretch herself and, you know, try something different, and also portrayed strong female sexuality, why was she blamed, you know, so thoroughly for the failure of this film? Why was she treated so poorly and pretty much drummed out of Hollywood for a while? Since the dawn of time, people have had a problem with female sexuality. And so it's the same old story, but I don't think that in 1995, 1996, that was on people's minds the way it is now. So I think now, you know, in the era of Me Too and Time's Up, we're really looking at these kind of issues in a way that we weren't back then. And a lot of young women, I found, are also looking at showgirls in a different way than people did back then. Some actually find Nomi Malone to be kind of a feminist icon. Some feel like, you know, the movie is not misogynist. It's such a true exploration of misogyny that's already present in our society and in the entertainment industry. And so maybe society has caught up to showgirls. So that's one of the things in exploring the journey the film went through, how it came to be, what happened, and people's love for it on various levels. We also, you know, would like people to kind of take that second look critically at what was the film really saying, and did it have a point to be made, maybe ahead of its time, but true to life.
What do you hope to accomplish with your work?
all of my work has a similar angle to it, which is that I want very much to entertain my audience. I always have that at the forefront of my mind. But I also do always want to work in something that has some kind of social commentary or message. It's kind of like once people have finished the ice cream cone, you know, maybe there's like a little nut at the center that they're like, oh, that was fun, but now I'm thinking about something, you know. I've been an activist and somebody interested in social issues my whole life. I mean, that was stuff that my parents and I would talk about around the dinner table. So I just kind of can't help but always have a little bit of that or a lot of that in any piece of work that I'm, you know, involved with or creating.
What is your personal commitment to LGBTQ civil rights?
Well, it's very deep because I definitely consider myself part of that community. I like to call myself fluid, but, you know, bisexual, I guess, works too. I had a very long journey of finally coming to terms with my own sexuality. It's too long to go into here, but suffice to say that it took me until I was in my 30s and after I was married to come to terms with that and to claim it. But I always knew there was something about me that, you know, was not totally right down the middle straight, mainstream, completely, you know, female, etc. I always knew that I had an identification with both feminine and masculine energy because of a lot of the messages I was given as a young person. I suppressed a lot of that, and, you know, that made me very unhappy until I finally dealt with it. But even before I came to terms with it, I was always very attracted to LGBTQ people and culture. I always have sort of felt like I had the sensibility of, you know, a six-year-old gay man in terms of what kind of like entertainment I was attracted to and, you know, things that I gravitated towards. So I also am a humanist, and I believe that everyone should be treated with equal consideration, dignity, you know, and be able to have the same rights as anyone else. That's just an absolute no-brainer for me. Unless someone is, you know, a rapist or a murderer, I just feel like there's no reason in my mind why we should deny anyone equal rights. I can't fathom it. And it's one of these battles that I have to fight in our society all the time. I just sometimes feel overwhelmed with, like, why is it this way? But it is, and I understand why. As a human being, people have fear. People have, you know, deeply held beliefs that are difficult to challenge at times. And so, you know, my commitment is just to keep trying to make inroads with people, keep trying to have conversations with people, and also keep fighting the good fight, as Vita Russo would do, to, you know, make sure that our elected officials acknowledge and uphold equality for everyone, which is one of the main principles of this country. Ostensibly, even though sometimes we get away from that.
How do you see our LGBTQ community or any minority moving forward in this Trump administration, especially with the new Congress as we head into the 2020 election?
I think we have to stay really strong and united. One thing that worries me right now about, quote unquote, our side, the left, is that we're so quick to jump on any little thing recently that, you know, where people don't pass like sort of a purity test of liberalism. And listen, there are some offenses that are egregious that we should not overlook. But I think we all have to remember that politicians are people. They're not messiahs. They're not saviors. They're not, you know, paragons of virtue. And I think we need to really keep our eye on the ball of what's really important and who are the people who are really not in our camp that we need to, you know, get out of office, for example. And for that reason, you know, I look at the field of candidates coming up for president in 2020. There are some that I like a hell of a lot. There are some that I'm not that fond of. But I am not going to tear any of them down without really good reason, because whoever gets that nomination that we feel like can win we've got to rally and get behind them. You know, one thing about the right is that they come together and get behind certain issues, and they don't waver. And a lot of times on the left, we're kind of, you know, well, what about this? What about this? And listen, all the issues are important, but we also have to remember that if we have too much infighting within ourselves, we're not going to get where we need to go. We need to pick some core values and focus, keep that eye on the ball, and make sure that we get elected officials in who are representing our interests. And in the meantime, I think on a more personal note, we also have to emotionally support each other, because everyone I know right now who's a lefty, which is most people I know, are going through a very difficult time right now as Americans, because we've come out of the Obama era where we really felt like real progress was being made. I have to believe that what we're going through right now is a moment in time where the dinosaurs are yelling their last gasp of, you know, revolt against, we had a black president, you know, gays are taking over, whatever it may be that's scaring them. Because the young people, for the most part, do not care about race, gender, sexuality. You know, once the millennials, I really think, get into, you know, full power, I think that the world is going to look a lot different. But right now we're in dark times and we're in difficult times, and we really have to kind of hold each other close and try to find joy as well. I think a lot of times we forget that life is short and we still have to find joy even while we're fighting during, you know, this crazy period in time.
With LGBTQ teens are 4 times more likely to attempt suicide than their heterosexual peers after facing bullying incidents, what advice would you have for these kids?
I would say first, listen, I hold you in my heart. I understand. You know, being a young person, it's not easy. And I can't even imagine what it's like now with social media. You know, there's many wonderful things about the internet and social media, but I'm glad that I didn't grow up with it in my life as a Gen Xer. But I know that it seems trite to say it gets better, but that movement was and is really wonderful, because the truth is, if you can hang on and get through those difficult years, life does become a lot different. Life is never easy. Life always has problems, and, you know, that's why we all need support at all times of our life. But I would encourage all of us who are older and who have gotten through that time and remember what it's like to, you know, really put efforts into supporting our young people and helping them get through that time. But for the young people, I would say reach out and get any kind of support you can, whether it's calling the Trevor Project hotline, you know, or finding your tribe of people, or just dreaming in your room, turn up your music and just dream of the time to come and what it's going to be like when you are beyond that, because checking out is not going to solve anything. You know, if you have to, you know, find some place, see if there's a place that you can get to that's safe. But please just try to hang on and get through this time, because there really is something on the other side, and then you are going to be a beacon of hope to other people down the line. One thing about going through trauma and tragedy, and I can speak from personal experience on my part as well, is that if you come out the other side, you are an infinitely more compassionate person and more empathetic person. And you are then able to give the gift of that empathy and compassion to other people. So hang on, get whatever help you can that you need, and be with us in the struggle to come, because we need you.
How can people get information about Goddess, the Fall and Rise of Showgirls?
Well, the best ways to get info is to follow us on social media. We are at showgirlsdoc, D-O-C, on Twitter and Instagram, and on Facebook, /showgirlsdoc. Our website is also showgirlsdoc.com, and people can sign up for our email list there. Right now, we're running a Kickstarter campaign. It's in its final days. It ends on April 18th, 7 a.m., California time, Pacific Standard Time, whatever, you know, so I don't leave out the rest of the Pacific Coast. And, you know, we have a lot of fun on our social media but we also are giving, you know, consistent updates about the film. And, you know, once it is available to be seen in 2020, we'll have all that information.
What other projects are you working on?
Right now, I'm also working on a horror anthology television series that we're developing and pitching. This is the other group producers and I. I'm a big horror movie fan and horror TV fan is something some people may know about me. A lot may not. I'm also working with another friend on a young adult novel that's based on her experiences as a teenager, and it deals with a lot of the issues that we've been talking about today. And there's also another documentary. It'll be my first one without Jeffrey that I'm working on, and it has to do with a group of older folks who worked during the Lyndon Johnson administration in the War on Poverty. I think that a lot of what was going on, you know, during that time is extremely interesting, and I don't want it to be forgotten because there are some lessons there that society could learn now about, you know, how to build a much healthier, better society than what we've had, at least since the Reagan era.
Is there a question you wish people would ask you?
I guess, Lottie, how can I donate? How can I help you make Goddess, you know, the Fallen Rise of Showgirls a reality? And the answer is that if you're listening to this before, 7 a.m. on April 18th, to donate to our Kickstarter campaign. But we also have a nonprofit fiscal sponsor, which is the Film Collaborative, and we will be able to accept donations via their website after that Kickstarter campaign ends, and there will be more information about that on our social media.
Do you have a favorite quote or mantra to get you through difficult times?
My favorite quote is Waylon Jennings, "I've always been crazy, but it's kept me from going insane." Because normal is overrated, but, you know, being crazy is a good thing. And then a mantra that I think that recently has become really important for me that I wish I'd adopted earlier, and so I'm sending it out to everyone to hopefully adopt at whatever point they are in their life, is when you have that overly critical, mean voice in your head that's beating up on you, you know, stop, acknowledge it, but say, listen, I wouldn't say those things to someone I loved or to my best friend. Why am I saying it to myself? And try to change that narrative in your head to something more loving and positive.